This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. So will the Pennsylvania General Assembly extend the 1% sales tax increase for Philadelphia before the July 1st expiration date? Will the state approve a $2 a pack cigarette tax in the city? Philadelphia is banking on that money to reduce the looming debt the school district faces and other financial obligations. These are just two of the complicated issues that face our guest, Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter, who has a year and a half left on his second term in office. We asked him to join us on Radio Times to talk about this and a number of other issues, including some executive orders that he has signed, raising the minimum wage for city contractors, banning smoking in public parks, and limiting the police department's cooperation with federal immigration officials. And Mayor Michael Nutter, it's been a little while. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Always good to be with you, Marty. Thank you.
So is this just a waiting game to see what the legislature does when it comes to helping Philadelphia and its school district?
Well, there's responsibility and action that needs to be taken in both areas, both in City Council and at the General Assembly. And just one thing I want to go back that you mentioned earlier. The General Assembly actually has already approved the extension of the 1% sales tax, which is due to expire on June 30th. Those dollars had been coming to the city, which we had petitioned back in 2009 for that increase to help us through the economic crisis. But last year, the General Assembly approved and the governor signed the extension. The issue today is that many of us in the political community are asking the General Assembly to consider a different distribution of those sales tax proceeds along with the authorization for Philadelphia to be able to impose a $2 pack tax on cigarettes solely to go to school. So we really need both of those actions in concert with each other to better help with the long-term, recurring, annual new funding going to our Philadelphia public schools and better educating our students.
I know you've had a disagreement, might be too strong a word, but with Darrell Clark, the city council president, about how that money should go, whether some of it should go to defray some of the cost of pension and some to the schools.
Right. That's not an area of any disagreement. We, myself, the council president, a number of local folks, and people in the General Assembly, both in the House and the Senate, have talked about this split, if you will, of some of the sales tax proceeds. As the legislation is currently written, there is a bit of a split. The council president suggested a greater split, proportionate, going to schools and to our city pension fund, which is only 47% funded. So there is no disagreement there. We had some issues about language. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. But the fundamentals of, you know, how do we have get recurring, long-term, substantial new funding to educate our children, as well as deal with a even larger, longer-term crisis, which is securing our pension fund, is the subject of this extension of the sales tax. Both are accomplished in the legislation that was passed, but we took a second look at it and said we could have a larger split or proportionate share going to pensions as long as we get the authorization for a cigarette tax, which has already been approved by a city council, so locally, last year. So this is not a tax vote for the General Assembly. It is merely authorizing the local legislative body, which they've already done, to impose such a tax. That tax will generate a little more than $80 million in a first year, all going to schools. And when you look at what Dr. Height and the SRC are faced with, the economics of public education in Philadelphia, and I would suggest in many other parts of the Commonwealth, are dire.
Some of these poor districts, right?
There are a number of poor districts, anywhere from 12 to upwards of 25 that are suffering some form of financial distress. So this is not just a Philadelphia problem. This is about fair and full funding for education all across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. This is about a student-weighted funding formula similar to 47 other states in the United States of America. Pennsylvania is one of only three in the country that does not use a student-weighted funding formula to distribute education funds. We need to fix that and change that, but we also have near-term actions that we need taken as well.
But the idea of student-weighted is that students in greater need get greater amounts of money?
There are a variety of weighting measures, if you will. If you look at some of the statutes that are in place in a variety of other states. So you can look at how many are enrolled versus how many actually attend. What is their poverty level? The number of children who English may not be their first language. Transportation costs, special education needs, intellectual disability challenges. There are a whole host of factors that you can calculate to determine what is the true cost of trying to properly educate a child. And this is a state constitutional obligation by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Obviously, Philadelphia and all the local municipal governments add some dollars to that. But getting a great education, from my perspective, is a constitutional right, and we need to step up to the plate, city and state, to do our part.
But it seems that education, and I'm sure you've said this before, is really a linchpin for the future of Philadelphia. You need an educated workforce. You need students to graduate from high school and maybe get an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree or beyond.
You really need some form of education beyond high school. This is 2014. This is not 1950, right? I mean, you can't just walk out of high school and go to the factory plant floor.
Down the street, probably.
Down the street. And as much as we're focused on manufacturing and many, many other jobs, I mean, you have to be able to read. You have to be able to write. You have to be able to calculate. You have to be able to think about things. You'll hurt yourself or hurt someone else if you can't fully function in this society. And so, obviously we need young people to graduate from high school, but then 2-year, 4-year career and technical education program, some form of higher learning is critical in the 21st century. We are hurting ourselves as a city, as a region, as a state, and I would suggest as a country, by not further investing in the education of young people all across the United States of America, but certainly here in Philadelphia. It will address so many issues and challenges that we have: high poverty rates, high illiteracy rates, unemployment, underemployment, the inability for folks to lift themselves out of poverty, teach their kids how to read. I mean, all of these kinds of issues are dealt with by investing in education. It will be the best dollar that you ever spend is investing in a child.
We did the first hour of the show today looking at some of the cheating allegations in the city, specifically focusing on a Cayuga Elementary School.
Yeah.
Five people have been criminally indicted as a result of allegations.
Tragic.
Very sad, very tragic. But how much does that hurt whatever argument you make to the state, to even nonprofits, others who would want to fund this school?
I have to tell you, virtually everyone is against cheating, and those people did whatever they did or what they alleged to do, and they'll go through the criminal justice process, and we'll see what happens with that. But, I mean, obviously cheating is wrong. It damages the child. It damages the reputation of the school district and the integrity of the process. And the district has taken numerous steps, along with the state, to address that particular issue. But when I'm in Harrisburg talking with legislators about funding education in Philadelphia schools, this issue actually rarely comes up, quite frankly, because this cheating issue was not solely in Philadelphia. There were school districts all across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We may be the largest, but we were not the only one. And so I think people, of good mind and good character look at this and say, isolated to a couple schools or a series of adults who did bad things, they got in trouble, that's that. It does not take away from the fact that the overwhelming majority of kids and teachers legitimately took their tests. Test scores have gone up year after year after year in Philadelphia. Young people are learning. Teachers are trying to do the best they can. But the resources are so limited. Mm-hmm. I mean, the listening tours that Dr. Lori Shure and I, Chief Education Officer, have been going on, I mean, it will break your heart when you hear the lack of counselors, the lack of nurses, the lack of library aides, the lack of an additional person for a principal with 400 or 500 kids in a school, and a principal literally may be the only non-teaching person, and a couple administrative staff, the only non-teaching personnel in the school. So, here's a scenario. Something just happened in the lunchroom. Something else is going on out in the schoolyard. Something happened in a classroom. I mean, you can literally only be in one place at one time dealing with all that. Class ends, the bell rings, changing classes. People have to be out in the hallways. I mean, so after-school programs, always on the chopping block. One school had music, another school didn't. Somebody's got art, somebody else doesn't. I mean, we're shortchanging our children, and we're shortchanging ourselves. And so, adults have to do the right thing. by way of our children. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that may involve taking steps. You might have to, you know, vote for a tax. You might have to put a vote up for X, Y, and Z. Well, you know, we take these jobs as public servants to do the right thing. And you can't make everybody happy. And if that's your goal in life, you might be in a wrong business.
Do you think, though, there's something more that you either could have done in the past or could be doing now to help the Philadelphia schools?
You know, I hold myself to a standard that says, you know, every day I think I could have done something better yesterday, and I'm working hard today to, you know, do better going forward. You know, I mean, look, the economic crisis, which, A, no one knew was coming, B, no one could really foresee the depth of it, or C, how long it was going to last. I mean, it has impacted everything. The school district today is pretty much in the same situation that the city government was in 4 or 5 years ago. The difference is, you know, we have an ability, we the city, we have an ability to do certain things. Unfortunately, you know, yes, I did raise people's taxes, property taxes twice, use and occupancy, parking rates. We cut out services. We cut salaries. I mean, we did a whole bunch of things. And you know, it'll be inconvenient and people get upset, and I understand that. And, you know, it's not a popularity contest. It's about providing high quality service and protecting the city. Today, our bond rating is A+ from Standard & Poor's, the highest it's ever been. We have an A rating from all three rating agencies. Our population is going up. Unemployment rates are going down. The things that we did, the tough decisions that we made 4 or 5 years ago, are now panning out for us. The difference is when you take those same kinds of drastic steps with education, the damage is almost immediate. Having fewer adults in a building, having fewer counselors, having fewer nurses has an immediate impact on students and the quality of education that they get. And that we can't stand for. And so, you know, I don't know what that thing is. Whatever it was, I wish I had done it. I wish we hadn't had the economic crisis. I wish the state funding had not been cut. But, you know, these are decisions mm-hmm. often outside of anyone's particular realm. So we're going to keep fighting. And today's fight is about, ultimately deciding on what the split is going to be on sales tax and getting our cigarette tax authorization at the General Assembly, and then having City Council take the actions that they need to here. The last thing on this is the current dollars in front of us pretty much only get us to where we've been in the past year, and that's inadequate. And so when Dr. Height talks about the $320 million that he wants to utilize, that $120 million from the sales tax is already in that budget. We can move those numbers around, but that's not getting us anything new. That's just keeping the same old subpar service that we have right now. And so what we really have to focus on is how do we start bringing back more and more of those personnel? And I'm trying to convey to the general public that these are not frill things. These are not fluff things. These are not nice things. These are fundamentals in a good operating school, that you have to have a few more counselors. I mean, if you were an 11th and 12th grader over the last couple of years, it's been tough.
Well, let's take a short break, and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. A lot to talk about. We've been focusing largely on the Philadelphia schools, and we will be talking about PGW and some other issues as well. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Westchester University has been offering graduate studies for over 50 years. Today, Westchester has over 70 graduate degree and certificate programs in business and public affairs, health, visual and performing arts, education, arts and sciences, and their new doctorate of nursing practice. With campuses in suburban Chester County, the new Center City, Philadelphia location, or online. Details at wcupa.edu/grad. Graduate education at Westchester University. Learn more.
How did the guy who produced this,
I hurt myself today,
also produce this? Hit me. 99 pounds, but a chip ain't one. Rick Rubin's three decades of hits, from Johnny Cash to Jay-Z. Next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. What drives people into gang violence?
I would say it's a mental illness born of social stigma and isolation and living in communities that are neglected by mainstream society.
A California sociologist weighs in next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. Again, Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter is our guest. He became mayor January 2008 and completes his second term January 2016. Much has happened in those years, and we're talking about a lot of that in this hour of Radio Times, beginning with a conversation about the Philadelphia school system. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Do you think the School Reform Commission, though, has outlived its usefulness? It's been there about 13 years. It was brought in to provide oversight of a district that was in crisis.
Well, it was. But I have to say that part of the reason that the School Reform Commission, you know, I mean, it gets a lot of attention as a state-created entity, but, I mean, it was only ever going to be as good as people wanted it to be, based on the premise that the state said, School District of Philadelphia is in financial crisis, we're going to bring in this oversight entity, and we, the state, are going to significantly financially support public education in Philadelphia. That part didn't really happen. It didn't really happen. And so, I mean, I'm not going to attach any quote-unquote blame to an entity that who came into existence on the premise and the promise back in 2001 that the state of Pennsylvania was going to significantly invest in education in Philadelphia, and this entity, the SRC, was going to be the policy-making entity and the financial oversight entity. It's hard to do a completely great job on financial oversight when you have less money. Or we don't have the proper dollars coming in. I mean, which goes back to, we don't have full and fair funding for education. We don't have a student-weighted funding formula, and the support that's necessary from the general public at both the city and state level still needs to be improved. So, you know, they can only do what they can do with what they have. And I'll just kind of say it that way. It's for others to decide, you know, ultimately whether they're in business or out of business, or they can put themselves out of business, whatever the case may be. That's who we're dealing with today. I think there are, you know, five people over there who passionately care about students, who passionately care about teachers, who passionately care about education. You know, when you have financial resources, you can do a whole lot of things. When you have no financial resources, you spend all day worrying about your financial resources and not your main mission, which is educating students. And so, you know, this is the great challenge in front of us right now, and has been for some time. When you add into that, you know, the other big looming issue that's out in the general public right now, and I'm going to draw some lines and then connect dots for folks in this conversation, is the proposed sale of the Philadelphia Gas Works.
My next question for you. Yes, go ahead.
When you look at, so, you know, the city of Philadelphia has owned PGW for 176 years. We are the largest city in the United States of America that still owns a gas company. It has been my premise for some time, and others, that, you know, providing gas service is not a fundamental service of city government. And in many instances, of course, cities all across America have gotten out of the gas or electric business. And so that is a huge transaction, a huge proposed transaction. We're asking City Council to review it. They have their own consultants, Concentric. We've selected UIL Holdings, which is a company in Massachusetts and Connecticut, pretty large company that provides gas and electric service in their current territory area. They had the best price of 33 interested entities that responded to the RFP. They had the best terms for the city of Philadelphia. They had the best terms in terms of customer service and respect for our great workforce over at PGW as well. And letting go of the financial risk that the city holds by still being in charge of PGW is huge for us, while at the same time protecting the workforce, providing high-quality customer service, keeping rates low, investing in the pipe replacement program, investing in the LNG plant and equipment, being able to take advantage of if ever there is service through Philadelphia in terms of Marcellus Shale, but also paying off all of those debts, fully funding the pension fund for the current PGW workers, and the prospect of a net proceeds to the city anywhere between $420 and $630 million, the bulk of which will all go into our pension fund, which, as I mentioned in the school district portion of the conversation, is only 47% funded. That relieves a significant amount of financial pressure on the city to focus our resources on schools on the one hand, with the sales tax and cigarette tax, PGW, net proceeds going to our pension fund, which will then ensure that we'd have an 80% funded pension fund somewhere in FY 26 or 27 or 28, depending on the calculation. But, I mean, that is a relatively short period of time to secure and shore up a pension fund, put annual recurring dollars over in our school system, and we can actually do both with these two transactions. And over 10 years, we will have invested $1.6 billion in educating our young people, and $1 billion in our city pension plan. There is no other plan, there is no other proposal that gets both of those accomplished over $1 billion of investment in those two major areas that is out there. There's no other plan that shows that kind of financial performance and secures the workforce.
Let me give you a chance to respond to something that was actually a commentary in the Inquirer. It looks like it was on Sunday from Ellen Dannon and Jim Walsh, saying the city-owned PGW does far more than simply provide gas to 500,000 Philadelphia customers. As a not-for-profit, PGW has an obligation, has no obligation to make money for shareholders and executives. Instead, it can and does act primarily for the benefit of all Philadelphians. You're saying it's time for a business to take over the gasworks?
Absolutely. There are so many more things that a privately run PGW could do in addition to providing high quality service and making the kind of investment that they will make. Presently, PGW is on about a 90-year pipe replacement plan, which we know that's kind of like a long time.
Yes, it is.
And UIL, having access to the capital markets and wanting to improve the business, will be able to do that in a much, much shorter period of time. We've owned the gas company for 176 years. There are things that have happened during that time, including PGW almost on the brink of financial collapse, requiring the city of Philadelphia to make a $45 million loan, which I did vote for when I was a member of city council, and they subsequently started coming back. But times have changed, and we need to move along with those times. A privately owned PGW can actually do business outside the city of Philadelphia. A municipally owned PGW can't. We won't have access to the same kind of financial markets that a privately owned company would, in addition to the fact that the workforce at UIL, on average, actually makes a little more money than the workforce at PGW. So, I mean, I saw that piece. It is filled, unfortunately, with errors and a particular agenda that is different than what we're trying to do here, which is ensure high-quality customer service, invest in LNG plant, which we have the capacity to do, and make money, and not have the financial risk of PGW on our books, and respect our hardworking union members over at PGW and securing and guaranteeing their jobs with a 3-year no layoff clause and everyone at PGW being offered employment. This is a great opportunity for the city to turn it into an energy hub, which will create even more jobs. And because of pipe replacement being done quicker, actually 686 workers and other union members will get more work in a much quicker period of time because of that accelerated pipe replacement program.
And what about the quote-unquote non-paying customers of PGW today? What happens to them if they're bought out by this private firm?
Well, here's the thing. Any utility in Pennsylvania is still governed by the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission. The UIL has already said they're going to keep in place the customer responsibility programs, the senior citizen programs that are in place today, and will be mandated by the PUC to have certain programs like that. But beyond that, UIL has similar programs in the places where they operate. And so from the start, what I said is any company that would propose to buy PGW had to guarantee that those programs would stay in place. Otherwise, I'd have no interest whatsoever. We do have a number of low-income customers and senior citizens who struggle, whether it's cold winter or not. It's just the sheer economics of issues in the city of Philadelphia. We must look out for those customers. We don't want people without heat or service at certainly at critical times. And so they have to deal with those customers in a respectful fashion. And obviously, those who can pay should pay, because otherwise the rest of us who are paying end up paying for those customers as well. So as long as everybody's trying to do their part, make an agreement, do your fair share, that's the kind of operation that we want to have.
And that's Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Let me get, looks like Barbara from Fairmount to join us on Radio Times. Barbara, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Just wondering, because I haven't heard any reference at all ever to this possibility, and that is that the teachers kick in and spend a little time doing so-called administrative-type roles that we don't have the funding to pay those people for anymore, or that the parents come in. I know in the suburbs you have homeroom mothers, you have parents coming in to help watching the playground, all kinds of things that parents chip in to do. And I haven't heard any reference to that happening in the city schools. Has it ever been considered?
Barbara, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And I should say, I think teachers really have their hands full teaching students
yes.
as opposed to doing administrative work.
Teachers should be teaching. And certainly many others, they run clubs, they have all kinds of after-school activities, but their primary focus and function is to be in a classroom teaching. The fact of the matter is, and I mean, I go to a lot of schools. I go to nowhere near as many as I'd like to every year, but I go to a lot of schools. There are tons of parents who are actively engaged and involved, but that's not a substitute for a counselor. It's not a substitute for a nurse. It's not a substitute for a, in the past, there were non-teaching assistants or, you know, climate managers or, you know, security personnel. There are a ton of additional support staff that were not there. And so, you know, if anyone wants to make a comparison between Philadelphia and the suburbs, let me have some of the same resources that many of our school districts in the suburbs have in terms of funding, whether, again, from the state or locally generated funds. And, you know, we'll show you a school system that can, you know, truly perform because kids will be getting the support that they need. So, I mean, you know, parents are doing a lot of things in many, many of our schools, but that should never be considered a complete substitute for having the proper funding to have on staff, hired personnel doing the jobs that have been done in the past.
Barbara, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me shift gears here because you signed an order recently limiting, as I understand it, police departments' cooperation with the federal immigration officials under certain circumstances.
Sure.
It sounds like a bit in defiance of immigration and perhaps even the Obama administration.
No, not. I wouldn't look at it that way. Our engagement with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has evolved over time. You know, they developed the Secure Communities program, and about every year or so, every 2 years or so, when the agreement comes up for renewal, we've made adjustments to it based on our experience. And so what we've said is, and I mean, I'll be very straightforward. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm against criminals. Homegrown, just got here last week, however you arrived. You know, if you came over on a Mayflower or, you know, in a canoe. You know, a criminal is a criminal, and I don't want any of those folks here in the city of Philadelphia. The fact of the matter, though, is in reality what was happening in many communities. We had the adjustment a couple years ago that blocked ICE from having information about victims and witnesses, because that was seen as a barrier for many who may have, you know, documentation issues, paperwork issues, may have prohibited people or inhibited them, rather, from reporting a crime that it had actually taken place because they were fearful that they were going to be ripped apart from their family. I don't know all the reasons that, you know, folks may not have all their documentation in place. What I do know is that many of our immigrants are hardworking, law-abiding. Their kids are in school, or they've gotten out of school. They own businesses. They are doing things, trying to acquire the American dream. And the fact that we don't have a national immigration policy held up, of course, in Washington with all those inane debates, notwithstanding what the president wants to do, should not subject people to sudden seizure. And so what we've said is basically, you know, if you have been convicted of a violent crime and there is some issue with regard to your immigration status under that particular set of circumstances with an order from a judge, we will then hold that particular person. In any other case, if you have, you know, you did whatever you did and, you know, you served your time or whatever the case may be and you don't have anything else hanging over your head, then, you know, go on about your business. I mean, you know, we're a local government, a police department and a jail system. And it is not our direct responsibility to do the work of the federal agencies, which in most instances are more well-funded, better suited to do, you know, that that kind of work. So it's a balance, and we've tried to take a balanced approach. It's considered one of the more progressive approaches in the country, and I think ultimately, but we're also seeing, because the president recently announced that he wanted a second review of many of the policies that are leading to excessive deportations. And so I think there's even some change in this regard coming from Washington, D.C. as well.
Let me put something else on the table here. In Philadelphia, about $500 million of uncollected real estate taxes. I mean, it seems that there is, not that it's easy to get to, but there is potential money out there for the city.
No question. There's a story in the Daily News about that. So, I mean, there's a couple misnomers with that number. First of all, it's not that number that you've put forward is not all real estate taxes. It's all taxes owed, plus penalty, plus interest. Some of which
still
go back.
A lot of money.
It's no question, a lot of money. Some of which go back 20, 30 years in many instances. Some of those folks may be dead. Now, obviously, on the real estate side, you move a property to a sheriff's sale, whether the owner's alive or dead or whatever the case may be. Through the sheriff's sale process, often you will get some of those dollars back. I think, as the story indicated, I believe it's in the Daily News today, we have significantly stepped up our efforts on delinquent tax collection. And again, we have many folks who have decided not to pay. And we're being very, very aggressive with those folks. And then you have a group of people who, in many instances, want to pay but can't through economics, through poverty, through whatever the case may be. And we're working with those folks and trying to get payment agreements, et cetera, et cetera. Again, from what I said earlier, do what you can, but do something. We have others who are hiding in plain sight, defying the law, ignoring us. And over the years, this huge balance has built up. And we're coming down like a hammer on a bunch of those folks. Pay your taxes. And if you're having a challenge, then contact us through the Revenue Department, through the Law Department, and we will work with you. But the complete defiance of not paying taxes will not be accepted in this city.
And that's Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter. We're going to take another very short break, get back to our conversation. We've been covering a fair amount of territory in this hour of the show, talking about the school district and its financial problems, the potential sale of the Philadelphia Gas Works, talking about ICE and immigration issues, and, of course, real estate taxes, uncollected taxes as well. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes at WHYY.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Museum of Art proudly supports WHYY and presents Art After Five, a blend of jazz and international entertainment every Friday. This Friday, Eleanor Dubinsky will perform her heartfelt songs expressing her passion for a diversity of people and cultures. Her music has a mellow groove that samples French pop, New American soul, and Latin rhythms. Art After 5, beginning at 5:45. More details are available online at philamuseum.org.
On the next Fresh Air, we discuss the growing Chinese presence in Africa, where Chinese firms are building infrastructure, extracting natural resources, and developing new markets. Journalist Howard French says, in the process, more than 1 million Chinese people have permanently settled in African countries. His new book is called China's Second Continent. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Valuable playtime.
Play is an essential part of being a young human being. It's essential to social life, and it's also essential to physiological and brain development.
When students lose out on recess, education suffers, even if staying off the playground avoids discipline problems in some schools. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing, talking with Michael Nutter, who is currently tweeting as I talk. More than halfway through his second term as mayor of Philadelphia, still has a long to-do list, and we're talking about some of those items on that to-do list, and again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You've been signing a couple of executive orders recently, one banning smoking or smoking tobacco in public parks in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And I know smoking, having interviewed you a bunch of times over the years, even in city council, that smoking has been a big issue for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a major public health issue. I was actually just sending an email back to someone.
I'll tweet later.
No, I mean, you know, Philadelphia is, you know, one of the biggest cities in the country that's seen actually a pretty decent drop in smoking, and we still have a ways to go. I think we've seen about a 5% reduction through, you know, the smoke-free legislation from, you know, back in 06, 07. We prohibited smoking at our recreation centers a couple of years ago, and you know, parks was just a natural next step. And, you know, in many instances, and people say, well, you know, how's it going to be enforced?
Exactly.
All those kinds of issues. What we found in our rec centers, and we find this also across the country, it's mostly self-enforced. When people know, you know, the fact of the matter is, even in Philadelphia, most folks are actually law-abiding. Very few people actually break the law, you know, and if people know what the rules are, and there'll be a, you know, kind of more of a warning period. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not about, you know, fines and tickets and all this other kind of stuff. It's really about, at our own rec centers right now, other adults will tell someone, you know, you can't smoke here. People put it out.
Because it's the law.
It's the law. And in our parks, most of which are actually more neighborhood parks, I mean, the vast expanses of, you know, East Park, West Park, the Wissahickon, the Penny Pack, the FDR, I mean, all these huge places, you know, Belmont Plateau. I mean, obviously a little different. But in most instances, again, I think people will just tell other people, you can't do that here.
Mm.
And, you know, much like the big controversies of the mid, you know, 2000s about, you know, smoking indoors and all of that, people adjusted to it and life went on. The fact of the matter is that, one, obviously smoking causes cancer and kills people. Two, children seeing adults smoking has a huge influence on them. And who's in parks? Children and adults. And so, again, it's just about making those kinds of adjustments, and we see this in other cities across the country.
Do we need smokers, though, to pay some of these sin taxes, as they're called? You know, if
sure, for the right cause.
Well, I mean, the city's asking for a $2 a pack tax on cigarettes.
And you know, I'll say it this way. It is an unfortunate, you know, consistent revenue source. We know that. But we also expect, and we've built into our model, that some of those revenues will go down over time, and then they'll kind of level off. But, you know, some people will stop smoking. That's a good thing. You know, lessen healthcare costs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we presently have a 10% liquor tax. That money also goes to schools. And so, you know, we have the big known taxes, you know, property tax, wage tax, business tax. I mean, you just can't keep going to those sources all the time. And if there is a consistent source that will generate revenues that are, you know, user in nature as opposed to broad-based, then from time to time we will utilize those funding sources, and especially for something as important as schools.
We have a Facebook comment from Kathy. What's Mayor Nutter's vision for Community College of Philadelphia? Do you have a vision?
Yeah, I do. Community College, of which I'm a one of the trustees. You know, we have a new president coming on, Dr. Generals, in July, and my view and vision for Community College has been the same for some time. It should be one of the greatest community colleges anywhere in the United States of America. It should be a school of choice. It really is, and I often refer to it as City College of Philadelphia. It really should be considered our own. City College, if you will. I want to see greater partnerships between and among Community College and our many, many high schools. I think 11th and 12th graders, many of whom, they should be taking courses while they're still in high school at Community College. I would love to see a partnership, a true partnership in a school, a six-year school, 9th through
2 years
of college, but all in the same place. You graduate not only, of course, with a diploma, but also your associate's degree. You have a model like that in New York, supported by IBM. I'd like to see the same thing here. More and more of our employers, if we do things right, should be using community college for training for their own employees, as opposed to many of the training programs that they have internal. They should be doing those over at community college. Community college should be at the table when we are trying to get a business to come to Philadelphia or expand in Philadelphia in terms of, again, workforce development and training opportunities. And so I think that community college can be so much more than it is today. Four campuses all across the city of Philadelphia. Properly supported with great leadership. State funding, unfortunately, has been going down. I've been trying to put more money in community college over the past few years, but it's been a challenge because of our budget. But the budget I have in front of City Council right now has an increase for community college in that budget. And so it should be one of the premier institutions in the city, even at a two-year college level. It should be great.
Let me get Lynn from West Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Lynn, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello, Mayor Nutter.
Hello.
This is Lynn Anderson from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. By the way, I'm a 1985 community college graduate.
Great.
That's good.
And
I would like to know, what do you think about creating programs for children aging out of foster care? Too many children are ending up homeless, jail, and even dead, and I think it's really sad, and I think somebody should sit up and take notice.
Well, Lynn, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and that's a pretty serious issue. I don't know what a mayor can do.
Well, it's a very, very serious issue, and it's an issue for our city. Having programs for young people, specifically aging out of foster care system, is something that Amory Ambrose, our great commissioner at the Department of Human Services, she and her team have looked at and have put forward some ideas and programs, but there's clearly more that we need to do.
Indeed. Lynn, thanks for the call. We have a tweet from Dustin. Does he, that would be you, does Mayor Nutter think it's necessary for the Philadelphia Police Department to store license plate data on people not under investigation? Is that something that you know anything about?
I don't necessarily know that we're doing that. I know that we obviously we're always out looking for either, you know, scofflaws, criminals, those kinds of folks. And if a vehicle has been involved in a criminal matter, I'm sure we keep track of that particular information. But I don't know that we're storing non-investigatory related data.
Let me get. Looks like Jesse from West Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Jesse, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm a former community organizer with Action United. I did a lot of work with parents of public school children, and I wanted to ask about school funding sources.
Sure.
Particularly since you promoted AVI, which was a big tax break for Comcast and other large corporations, the one that runs the Liberty Place in particular, shifted the tax burden to homeowners, and you're also promoting another regressive tax on the cigarette tax. Why are we cutting taxes on corporations at all when we need so much money for our schools, and then on top of that, shifting tax burden to the people of Philadelphia in a regressive way?
Jesse, yeah. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I mean, you have a number of, unfortunately, incorrect statements in your premise, but AVI was about making the property assessment system, which was completely broken, hopefully you're not suggesting we should go back to it, but completely broken, ineffective, inequitable, and in some instances actually corrupt. The fact of the matter is that on the residential property assessment side of things, you had numerous residential property owners who were paying much more than they should have been paying, and other residential property owners paying much less than they should have. And so what you saw at the end of the current AVI program is that about 70% of residential property owners either saw no change or actually got a tax cut. On the commercial and industrial side of things, which the system was a little better at keeping track of what was going on, some of the commercial property owners did see an increase, and some, based on the accuracy of the system, actually did see things go down. With regard to the couple companies
Comcast.
That you mentioned, yeah, I mean, whether it's Comcast or someone else, which, you know, is employing thousands of people here in the city of Philadelphia, we've not created any particular or specific tax break for them. If they or some other company or a homeowner builds a new building in the city of Philadelphia, you get a 10-year tax abatement. That's what they received. And, you know, with regard to the new announcement, a $1.2 billion new building, technology and communication center, any investment by the city is solely in primarily in infrastructure that helps that project along. I think there'll be a couple thousand more jobs that come as a result. And so the real issue about education funding is from the city, the bulk of the funding comes from property tax, use and occupancy tax, and liquor tax, and a small portion from a school income tax. And those are some of the main sources of funding, and then the rest naturally comes from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Again, I'll go back. It sounds like a little bit of a broken record. This really is about how do you get full and fair funding. We need a student-weighted funding formula. We have a couple measures that are in front of either City Council or the General Assembly in the near term that need action right now, and then we need to build on that base going forward. And I've already talked about PGW and how we deal with that sale, help our pension fund. All those issues are really kind of tied together.
Jesse, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I mean, it's clear that there are parts of the city that are doing very, very well. And we know that younger people and sometimes seniors are moving into the city because they see a place where they want to live.
Sure.
But do you worry that we're creating two Philadelphias? There's a kind of emerald city of downtown that looks great. Then you go out into some of the neighborhoods, and frankly, you've got this really high poverty rate, and then, of course, all the problems associated with that.
Philadelphia is, socioeconomically, ethnically, even business-wise, is one of the most diverse cities in the United States of America. And so we have, unfortunately, the highest poverty rate of any top 10 city in the country, although that rate has come down about 2 points in recent times, but still much too high. We've talked about education as the centerpiece of dealing with those kinds of issues. I think there are more neighborhoods beyond the downtown that are showing growth and promise. And so Philadelphia has the highest percentage increase of millennial population of any major city in the United States of America, and they all don't live downtown. We have a ton of empty nesters moving into the city of Philadelphia, and they don't all live downtown. We have thriving commercial corridors in a variety of places outside of downtown. And when you look at the skyline and you see the number of cranes up, many of which are in Center City, but many are not. And you see that activity taking place in neighborhoods, usually anchored by college or university or hospital, healthcare and medicine, representing about 35% of the jobs in the city. So, I don't think we're at the tale of two cities stage, but, I mean, there are a lot of tales about this city, and there are a lot of stories to be told. And the resiliency that we see in people, the struggle every day to try to do better. People want to work. They want to go to school. And so barriers to education in terms of cost, the number of people to show up for job fairs. We had a very different kind of way. We had a job fair for folks who have a previous criminal record at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. I mean, thousands of people showed up because they want to work.
Right.
People want to work. I mean, any ideas floating around about, you know, folks just want to kind of, you know, sit at home and hang out and have a check come or get unemployment or something, I mean, that's a whole lot of nonsense. I mean, in every system you'll have some folks who are, you know, taking advantage or doing something. But for the most part, people want to work. They want opportunity. And it's our responsibility to encourage a positive business environment, invest in education, do everything that we can to encourage job creation and remove barriers in that regard. And that's how you run a city. We've not talked at all about the issue of public safety for the most part. I mean, you know, last year we had the lowest number of homicides since 1967. And Police Commissioner Ramsey and his team and Philly Rising and community folks all working in partnership. It's not any one entity's responsibility on public safety. It is about, you know, trimming trees to make sure that light can be seen. It's about replacing light bulbs. It's about getting rid of abandoned cars and knocking down vacant properties that might be a danger. I mean, all of those things working together, that's a city. But at the heart of it has to be investing in children, investing in education, making sure there are good after-school programs, making sure that our rec centers, you know, are clean and bright, and that we have engaged rec leaders and parents and other adults in the community, that village concept, that they're volunteering at the school, they're volunteering at the rec center, they're volunteering at the library. I mean, that's when it's all clicking. That's when it's really working.
We have about a minute before we have to say goodbye. What do you make of the fact that the primary that was held last week, I think something like 12% of Pennsylvanians went to the polls to vote? What does that tell you?
It tells me not a lot of people went to vote.
I know, but that means they're not engaged. They're not engaged with the political system.
Yes. Unfortunately, ultimately, you know, and, you know, what I try to say to folks is, especially in Philadelphia, I mean, you know, the pretty much everyone knows, I mean, the two huge races that always get a ton of attention naturally, you know, mayor's race, presidential race. Well, you know, I happen to think the governor's race is pretty important, too. I mean, you know, there are only 50 governors in the United States of America. It's a pretty significant job. You know, so in my mind, there is no off-year election, and it is not the sole responsibility of the candidates to be, you know, entertainers or so, you know, engaging or have adult food fights or whatever the case may be that excites you to come out. I mean, we only ask you to vote twice a year. I mean, it's not much to ask in terms of citizenship to, you know, exercise your right to vote, that some people suffered and died to allow others that right today. We should not take it for granted.
Well, on that note, Mayor Michael Nutter, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're very welcome. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about this program. Many thanks to former Radio Times producer Patty McMahon. She has left WHYY for a new job in satellite radio, a channel called Business Radio powered by the Wharton School. She's not going far, but she will be missed for all her hard work, her show ideas, her passion for good-sounding radio, and her dedication to Radio Times. Thanks again, Patty, for everything. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.